Hello, I'm Lina Ahmoudou. Welcome to Health Chat. Tuberculosis, or TB, a bacterial infection of the lungs, is one of the world's deadliest diseases. The viral infection causes the death of nearly 1.5 million people each year, according to the World Health Organization. After decades of progress, cases are on the rise once more. March 24th was World TB Day, and as Henry Ridgewell reports, there are hopes that a vaccine may be developed in the next few years to help eradicate the disease.
Tuberculosis killed 1.6 million people last year. Progress against tackling the disease was set back significantly by the coronavirus pandemic.
Because of the lockdown, because of the fact that actually the response to COVID was constructed a lot on the work, on the equipment, on the hospitals and dispensaries, on the staff that worked for TB. A lot of them were completely shifted to deal with COVID.
Doctors say that has led to rising numbers of people with untreated and undiagnosed TB. India has the highest disease burden globally, with more than 500,000 TB deaths in 2021, about a third of the global total. But there is hope that the disease can be overcome this decade. India diagnosed and treated 2.4 million people with TB in 2022. Indonesia, Bangladesh, Nigeria, South Africa, Ethiopia and Brazil also made progress. World TB Day on March 24th marks the anniversary of German doctor Robert Koch's discovery in 1882 of the bacterium that causes the disease. This year, the theme is Yes, We Can End TB. India has set a target to effectively eradicate tuberculosis by 2025. The World Health Organization has set a global target of 2030 through diagnosis, treatment, and the development of a vaccine.
When you put together the fact that we have a bit more political commitment, that we have a lot of new tools that we didn't have before, that we have the perspectives of a vaccine to come in the next 2-3 years, and we have an amazing civil society and community platform and networks, it's actually giving us a lot of hope that we can end TB.
But that will require more funding, an estimated $230 billion over the next 8 years.
We are pretty convinced that the world will try to end TB and will try to be as bold as it was during COVID. Because for COVID, for the COVID vaccine, $100 billion were found more or less like that.
Tuberculosis is more prevalent and deadly in poorer countries. Scientists say a lack of commercial opportunity has hindered research and development into new TB medicines, but the development of a new vaccine would save millions of lives. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
Uganda is on high alert following a reported outbreak of Marburg disease in Tanzania. Screening points have been installed at the border with Tanzania to stop the spread of the illness into Uganda. It is the first Marburg outbreak in Tanzania, although Uganda has had several outbreaks. Catherine Nambi reports from Kampala.
The deadly hemorrhagic Marburg fever has claimed the lives of at least 5 people in Tanzania, and Ugandan authorities have tightened surveillance at its borders to screen for the disease. Dr. Edward Muwanga is the health officer of Uganda's Chotela district at the border with Tanzania.
We've increased the number of health workers that are screening the travelers. Previously, we had about 4 of them, but as we talk, we have 12 health workers stationed.
Minister of Health officials are set to visit the border districts to check on their capacity to handle any outbreak and to create awareness. Emmanuel Ainebiona is the spokesman for the ministry.
Already we've started, but targeted sensitization, but also we shall have subsequently countrywide messages to alert the population.
Ainebiona says residents at the border have been advised to report any suspected Marburg cases for isolation and proper management.
The alertness, the vigilance must be high, and they should share information on any suspected persons with the Ministry of Health or the district health officials. Hand washing is key, avoiding body contact with the infected persons or suspected persons, avoiding contact with the vomiters. Any rise in body temperature, they need to seek medical attention at the nearest health facility.
The Marburg virus is carried by the African fruit bat and can infect humans, monkeys and pigs. The symptoms of the illness are similar to Ebola, such as severe fever, chills, rash and diarrhea, often accompanied by bleeding and organ failure. There are no vaccines or antivirals yet for the illness, and treatment often involves keeping the patient hydrated and medication to control fever and vomiting. The onset of Marburg in Tanzania comes as another African country, Equatorial Guinea, is also trying to contain the disease, which may have killed at least 11 people since early January. Uganda is just recovering from an Ebola outbreak and has in previous years successfully dealt with a number of Marburg cases. This is Catherine Nambi for VOA News in Kampala.
For more insights on the outbreak of Marburg virus in Tanzania, I spoke with Dr. Elisha Osati, an internal medicine physician at Muhimbili National Hospital in Dar es Salaam, Tanzania.
Marburg disease is a viral disease caused by the Marburg virus. And this is a virus that belongs to filavirus class, the same class with the Ebola virus. This Marburg virus was first found in a lab in Germany in 1968, and then it spread to other countries. So there have been outbreaks in Africa, especially in Congo, Uganda, Equatorial Guinea, now in Tanzania, but again in some countries in Asia. It has been there, so there are sporadic outbreaks that have been there.
So talk to us about what is going on right now in Tanzania. What are health authorities saying about this outbreak at this point?
It was on 16th of March where we, you know, the government announced that there is an outbreak in some part of the country. That is in northwestern part that you call it in Kagera, around Lake Victoria. So there was an outbreak. There are families who are getting the similar disease. And later on, they were getting fever, you know, body weakness, bleeding from different parts of the body. And to date, there are 8 cases have been found. And unfortunately, 5 of them died. There are like 193 individuals that are being followed up who got in contact with these patients. But they are not there. It is almost 5 days now. They've not reported any symptoms relating to Marburg. So there is a big team that has been employed at the area, including the WHO team. So since we had five days ago, there's no new case that have been found apart from those 8 ones that have been reported. So it seems the situation has been contained with the team that's on the ground.
So would you say there is cause for concern or the outlook seems positive at this point?
The response is there. And as I said, since last week, we have not seen, been reported any case, any new case of the similar disease in the area. So it is our hope that it has been contained with the help from WHO and from the team, from the Minister of Health, and again from the regional team around the Kagera area. So there has been active surveillance following up those who have been in contact with patients, including healthcare workers. It was among those who died, with 3 of them were healthcare workers who attended the first patient who came in. So we are confident that the situation has been contained. And as we see, there is not any patient who has developed symptoms among those who are followed up within the families and the hospitals.
Marburg is often compared to Ebola. What would you say to the communities that are concerned, to the people that are really scared? Because when you think Ebola, it's always fear.
Yes, as I said before, Marburg and Ebola share the same family. They are both flavivirus and they present with the same symptoms. But the symptoms of Ebola are so severe and the mortality rate is higher in Ebola compared to Marburg. With the people at the area, as I said, there are a lot of health programs health education going around at Kagera. People are assisted to, one, to follow the hygiene, to wash their hands with running water and or using sanitizers. And within the hospital, infective and preventive control measures, the big gathering that people used to, they've been advised to not to prevent unnecessary gathering. And to follow, you know, the steps that they are being taught by the healthcare workers around.
So, Dr. Osati, when there is an outbreak like this and healthcare workers are at the forefront, sometimes you don't even know what you're dealing with. How do you protect yourself?
I think we had a lesson from coronavirus that just passed. And again, with Ebola, that was in a neighboring country, Uganda. So we've been training healthcare workers through the infective preventive controls. So whenever you receive the patient, the first things you have to wear the protective gears like gloves, even your mask. And there are gowns, the special gowns that we also use. But again, when we receive the patient, we need to isolate them in a special isolation where they don't mix with others. And again, we make sure that the community, for example, those that died, the community don't bury them. That's become the responsibility of the trained healthcare workers. And we insist on washing our hands before attending any patient or wearing gloves and other protective gears, as I say. So healthcare workers have been trained much to follow the procedures to protect themselves, but again, to protect their patients and protect others who are coming in the hospital.
And finally, what is the treatment protocol for Marburg?
Unfortunately, like other viral diseases, Marburg has no specific treatment. So currently we treat it, we call it supportive treatment. We treat it when the patient comes with symptoms, we treat the symptoms. Because there's no cure, there's no vaccine for it. So what we just do, if the patient comes with fever and you know, body pain, so we give anti-pain. If they come with diarrhea, because when the patient is having diarrhea, they will also lose not only fluid or water in the body, but they also lose the important minerals like sodium, potassium, which are very important for the function of the body. So we need to replace the water. You can give orally, but also they can be given intravenous fluid and replace the minerals. So when they come with bleeding, we need to give them blood products to replace the blood that's been lost. And, you know, the psychological, again, need to give them psychological support. So it is a supportive treatment. And if they receive supportive treatment, they get well very soon. So if the patient is not treated, there is a chance, 50 to 80% chance of them being died from the disease. Because the supportive treatment is very important for them. For example, we talk about replenishing the blood that they've been lost. Fluid, electrolytes have been lost, but again, nutrition support for this patient and things like fever, which all these can cause problems within the body. So they need supportive treatment. That's what we really do now. And again, the support to the family and the relatives who are coming around.
That was Dr. Elisha Osati, an internal medicine physician at Muhimbili National Hospital, speaking to us from Dar es Salaam, Tanzania. You are listening to Health Chat on Voice of America. It is time for a short break. Don't go away. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Health Chat. South Sudan is far behind schedule in attempts to reduce child and maternal death due to absence of peace and stability. Acting Health Minister Aya Benjamin Warile says South Sudan has one of the highest maternal mortality rates in the world, with 1,150 deaths per 100,000 live births, due mostly to infection, hemorrhage, and obstructed labor. Wake Simon Wudu reports from Juba.
There are 1,150 deaths per 100,000 live births in South Sudan. Most of the deaths are due to infection, hemorrhage, and obstructed labor. Officials from the USAID, the United Kingdom, and UNICEF say while meaningful progress has been made in reducing maternal and under-5 deaths globally over the past 10 years, only a handful of countries are likely to meet the Sustainable Development Goal targets by 2030. The officials spoke during a press conference to commemorate the 10th anniversary of the Global Maternal and Child Survival Call to Action. They say they are seeing extremely worrying rates of mortality for mothers and babies, especially in South Sudan, which is performing the worst globally. Jasper Mola is the UNICEF Deputy Country Representative for South Sudan.
In South Sudan, while we see some progress, for example, in the impressive increases in women giving birth in the presence of a skilled health practitioner or in a health facility, we are still seeing 1 in 10 children dying before their 5th birthday, with a concentration of these deaths in the first month or the first year of life.
5 million children under the age of 5 die every year, and nearly half of those are newborns, and most of them die from preventable causes, says Mola, adding that in South Sudan there are climate-induced recurrent shocks such as flooding, drought, poverty, and conflict. He says South Sudan needs to strengthen primary health care systems and adopt an integrated approach that looks beyond clinical health care to improving water and sanitation, hygiene and nutrition, as well as reducing gender-based violence. Kate Crawford is with the USAID Global Maternal Child Nutrition Office. She says while progress has been made over the past 10 years, instability and weak national and state immunization systems continue to hinder those efforts.
South Sudan needs its leadership to stand by its people, ensure that peace and stability are here. I mean, we recognize the ministry and the parliament are not flush with funds, but you have to create an environment where private sector investment can come in. You have to create an environment where civil society can operate freely and engage in all the community work that needs to be done.
Healthy care in South Sudan is one of the least funded sectors by the government. The money allocated for health dropped from 9.7% in the 2021-2022 fiscal year budget to just 4.2% in the 2022-2023 fiscal year budget. Member of Parliament Benjamin Malek Alier, a member of the Health Committee, says the executive dictates on the budget allocation and gives Parliament no opportunity to adjust the figures.
Although we started to increase it, when we ask, especially our members of the Parliament, the budget which is brought always is brought by the executive and they put a ceiling. So most of our attempts to increase the health budget don't go through, particularly last year.
Acting Health Minister Warile acknowledges the South Sudan situation of maternal and child deaths remains among the worst in the world. Warile says though the budget allocated to the health sector is too small to manage the magnitude of the problem, absence of peace and stability affects the government's efforts.
You will all agree with me. Even if we have the best budget, even if we have the best plans or programs, without peace, where would we go?
Crawford says the call to action for maternal, newborn and child health initiative is to refocus attention on the needs of children and mothers. The U.S., the United Kingdom and UNICEF say improving the survival chances and quality of life of women, newborns and children remains an urgent global challenge. For VOA News, I'm Wake Simon Wudu in Juba.
In the eastern region of Democratic Republic of Congo, the offensive by M23 rebels has pushed thousands of internally displaced people into camps on the outskirts of Goma City in North Kivu province. Overcrowding can lead to the spread of cholera. In the Bulengo camp, 2,125 cases of cholera have been reported in 2 weeks, according to health officials in the city, a situation that worries residents. For VOA, Zaneb Neti Zaidi visited Bulengo and has the story.
In this cholera treatment room, set up in the Bulengo camp by Doctors Without Borders, Mikaela Mutumai is caring her 8-year-old daughter who has diarrhea and vomits regularly. She says that the lack of clean water and latrines in the camp are the main causes of the epidemic. She says before they brought water to the camp, She paid 200 francs or under a dollar for a 20-liter container per day. There was only enough for drinking and cooking, but not enough to wash her children, who remained dirty. In the camp, there were no latrines. They used to relieve themselves in the bush because they had no other choice. Imjibu, the company responsible for water distribution in this part of the city, has increased its deliveries since the cholera outbreak began. The representative of the community, Baleke Buyana Prosper, says every morning 400 people are mobilized to spray the camp with chlorine in order to limit the spread of the epidemic. He says when they disinfect, they target the huts and the toilets close to them and also chase away the numerous flies in the camp. They disinfect places where public bins are placed as well. To prevent the spread of the epidemic throughout the districts of Lac Vert, Emery Muhindo, the head nurse of the Buhimba Health Area, in which the Bulengo camp is located, is calling for health assistance from the Congolese government. He says that at the moment there are already latrines installed, but they are not enough. They are advocating for more latrines and water pipes connected to them. In this camp of internally displaced people, everyone with diarrhea is now considered a suspect case of cholera. Camp residents and leaders are asking all people of goodwill to help the vulnerable population. For VOA Africa, I'm Zanem Netizaidi in Goma.
Malawi President Lazarus Chakwera is appealing for additional humanitarian assistance for thousands of Malawians displaced by Cyclone Freddy, which has killed more than 500 people in the country. Chakwera made the urgent request to Malawi's parliament on Wednesday when he was presenting an assessment of the cyclone's impact. Lamek Masina reports from Blantyre, Malawi.
Malawi President Lazarus Chakwera made an urgent appeal for additional humanitarian assistance on Wednesday after assessing the impact of Cyclone Freddy, which also hit Mozambique. He told the lawmakers that although the country is receiving a lot of local and international assistance for the victims, more aid is needed.
So many have responded positively to our appeal, and I have personally committed to acknowledge every support. For the situation is so grave that we simply cannot take any contribution for granted. However, the supplies we are deploying are far from enough for the magnitude of the need.
Malawi's Disaster Management Affairs Department says there now are upward of 500,000 people who have been displaced, living at 534 camps. Chakwera told the lawmakers to bury their political differences and work together to address the devastation caused by the powerful storm.
This is one of the darkest hours in the history of our nation. And if we are going to emerge from this dark hour and see the joy of a new dawn in the future, we must all roll up our sleeves and get to work. If we are going to see the light of a new dawn again, we must take the necessary steps now for safeguarding a brighter tomorrow for Malawians.
Chakwera announced the government will soon introduce legislation aimed at helping safeguard people from natural disasters.
I also ask you for support of the new legislation that my administration, Madam Speaker, will be bringing to this House to regulate the management of disasters better going forward, and to regulate the relocation of people from disaster-prone areas and give them more resilience in the face of future disasters.
Ondwani Nankuma, leader of the opposition political parties in the Malawi parliament, welcomed the plan to have legislation for disaster management and emphasized the government must deal with sanitation issues at evacuation camps to avoid the outbreak of various diseases.
Madam Speaker, given the magnitude of the disaster, our water resources have been depleted, boreholes have been washed away, water taps have been washed away. Let me register a call that government should look into this with other partners. Because if we allow these people to continue drinking unprotected water from unprotected wells, then there shall be another outbreak of diseases in these camps.
Cyclone Freddy hit Malawi amid its deadliest cholera outbreak of the past 2 decades, which so far has killed at least 1,600 people. The Malawi Health Ministry warned this week the cyclone has increased the risk of the spread of other communicable diseases such as typhoid, dysentery, and diarrhea. Lamek Masina for VOA News, Blantyre, Malawi.
The government of Liberia, in collaboration with UNICEF, USAID, and other partners, is hosting the 3rd International Community Health Workforce Symposium. The conference is focusing on boosting primary health care for all by building resilient health systems. Delegates of over 40 countries have gathered in Liberia's capital, Monrovia, to recognize the efforts of community health care workers and to resolve the bottlenecks that impede progress. Rita Jilobe-Dwe reports from Monrovia.
Making remarks at the official opening of the conference in Monrovia, Liberia's health minister Wilhelmina Jala described community health workers as heroes and foot soldiers in the fight to improve health care for all.
These community health workers have extended health care access to nearly 1 million Liberians. They have been on the front line of our surveillance efforts. To see the impact, we can look to a few basic indicators. Our maternal mortality has reduced from 1072 to 742.
She explains how donors can fully unravel for potentials of community health workers and to bridge the gap of hindered access to health care.
Investment in community and primary care are an investment in the future of Liberia. They will drive our country towards sustainable development goals and the AU 2063. We need to invest smartly to ensure that we have a fit for purpose and motivated workforce.
The Global Malaria Coordinator for the United States President's Malaria Initiative, Dr. David Watson, said the U.S. government is pleased with the progress made by healthcare workers in Liberia and the world at large.
We as the U.S. government are absolutely committed to community health workers writ large. We want to make sure that they're paid, remunerated. We want to make sure they're trained adequately. And we want to make sure that they are well-equipped, because without those three things, they're unable to realize their potential and the potential that they can contribute to the health sector. So it's our responsibility collectively, but certainly we in the U.S. government are proud to support those efforts on behalf of community health workers globally.
Margaret Odira is a community health worker from Kenya. She says she is happy to talk about some of the challenges she faces by meeting with workers from other countries and policymakers.
For a long time, country leaders have downplayed the issues that concern upgrading the community health workers. And I believe from now, the issue affecting the community health workers will be presented by the community health workers themselves. And I hope that policymakers and leaders will put pressure to our country leaders to implement our pay professionalization, institutionalization as soon as possible.
Organizers say this 3rd edition of the Community Health Workers Symposium will produce a high-level report that summarizes current issues and achievements. It will also articulate priorities and next steps with measurable targets. For VOA Africa, I am Rita Jirabeduwo in Monrovia.
That's all for this edition of Health Chat. For more health news and medical breakthroughs, visit voaafrica.com. Thank you all for joining us, and special thanks to all our affiliate stations throughout Africa for carrying Health Chat.
I'm your host, Lenore Mudu in Washington, with producer Mukbil Yabaro. Until next time, take care, stay safe, and strive to make every day a healthy day.